All glory is to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Guru Ramana. Vishnu Varaya Krishna Praste Guru Sri Bhakti Radha Krishna Yukinamane Namaste Sarasari Guru and the Sharani Vizhiva Punyavari Pustake Rishidharana. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om
Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo
Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Saraswatim Vyasam Bhojaya Mudiraye Nasta Prayeshu Vapadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. We're reading from Srila Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports, 5th canto, 3rd chapter, text number 19. Shri Shuka Uvacha,
Shri Shuka Uvacha,
Iti Nishamayantya,
Nishamayantya,
Merudevya,
Iti Nishamayantya,
Merudevya Patim, Abhidayantadare Bhagavan. Iti nashamayanta merudevya patim avidhayan taradade bhagavan.
Iti nashamayanta merudevya patim avidhayan taradade bhagavan.
Iti nishamayanta merudevya patim avidhayan taradade bhagavan. Iti
shukadeva
Sri Shukadeva Goswami said.
Iti,
iti,
thus,
Nishamayantya,
Nishamayantya,
who was listening?
Merudevya, Merudevya,
in the presence of Merudevi,
in the presence of Merudevi,
Patim,
Patim,
unto her husband,
unto her husband,
Abhidaya,
Abhidaya,
having spoken,
having spoken,
Antaradadhe,
Antaradadhe,
disappeared.
Bhagavan,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Translation, Shukadeva Goswami continued, after saying this, the Lord disappeared. The wife of King Nabi, Queen Merudevi, was sitting by the side of her husband, and consequently she could hear everything the Supreme Lord had spoken. Responsibly. Shukadeva Goswami continued,
After saying this,
the Lord disappeared. The wife of King Nabi,
Queen Merudevi,
was sitting by the side of her husband. And consequently, she could hear everything the Supreme Lord had spoken. Purport. According to the Vedic injunctions, one should perform sacrifices in the company of one's own wife. Sapatniko dharma nacharet, religious rituals should be performed with one's wife. Therefore, Maharaj Nabi conducted his great sacrifice with his wife by his side. I'll read the next verse and we'll conclude the chapter. Text number 20. Parishitasmin eva Vishnu datta Bhagavan Paramarshibi prasadito. Nabhe priya chikir shayatad avaro dayane merudevim dharman. Tarshayi tu kamo vata rasananam shamananam rishinam urdhva mantinam shukala, shuklaya tanu vavat tatara. O Vishnu Datta, Parikid Maharaj, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was pleased by the great sages at that sacrifice. Consequently, the Lord decided to personally exhibit the method of executing religious principles, as observed by brahmacharis, sannyasis, vanaprastas, and grihastas engaged in rituals. and also satisfy Maharaj Navi's desire. Consequently, he appeared as the son of Meru Devi in his original spiritual form, which is above the modes of material nature. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When the Supreme Lord appears or descends as an incarnation within this material world, he does not accept a body made of the three modes of material nature, sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamaguna. Mayavadi philosophers say that the impersonal God appears in this material world by accepting a body in the sattva-guna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti states that the word Shukla means consisting of Shuddha-sattva. Lord Vishnu descends in a Shuddha-sattva form. Shuddha-sattva refers to the sattva-guna, which is never contaminated. In this material world, even the mode of goodness, sattva-guna, is contaminated by tinges of raja-guna and tamaguna. When sattva-guna is never contaminated by raja-guna and tamaguna, it is called shuddha-sattva. Sattvam vishuddham vasudeva savditam. That is the platform of Vasudeva, whereby the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, can be experienced. In Bhagavad Gita 4.7, Sri Krishna himself says, Yada yada hi dharmasya tanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya taratmanam shujamyam. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Unlike ordinary living entities, the Supreme Lord is not forced by the modes of material nature to appear. He appears, Dharman, Darshi Tukama, to show how to execute the functions of a human being. The word Dharma is meant for human beings and is never used in connection with beings inferior to human beings, such as animals. Unfortunately, without being guided by the Supreme Lord, human beings sometimes manufacture a process of Dharma by concoction. Actually, Dharma cannot be made by man. Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam, from Bhagavatam 6.39. Dharma is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as the law is given by the state government. Man-made dharma has no meaning. Srimad Bhagavatam refers to man-made dharma as kaitava dharma, cheating religion. The Supreme Lord sends an avatar, incarnation, to teach human society the proper way to execute religious principles. Such religious principles are bhakti marg. As the Supreme Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja. The son of Maharaj Nabi, Rishabdev, appeared on this earth to preach the principles of religion. This will be explained in the fifth chapter of this fifth canto. Om Gnanatme Namaste Ananjana Salakaya Chaksurumetam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Maha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Svapadanti. Lord Rishabhdev's teachings are essentially how to step by step extricate ourselves from this material world. He showed by his example how not to be attached to the material world. He was very beautiful. He attracted people from all levels of society. And yet, as he advanced along the path of human life, apparently human life, he renounced everything. At any rate, he begins his famous instructions by teaching his sons how to become detached, and that tapo divyam, that human life is actually meant for austerity. This is the first principle. And this is what distinguishes human beings from non-human beings. that is voluntary austerity, and not austerity that is mixed with the modes of ignorance and passion. But as Prabhupada is indicating here, austerity must be executed in the mode of shuddha-sattva, or pure goodness. Everyone undergoes some form of austerity in human life, but that austerity is generally mixed with the modes of passion and ignorance. Just as we see, we're farming here, and on the other side of the fence, some other people are doing what looks like the same thing. They're getting up early in the morning, they're working the fields, and they're staying up late at night, and they're working very hard. But their austerity is of a different nature. It has a different goal. It is completely the opposite, actually. Instead of wanting to gradually free ourselves from this material world step by step, which is what the Srimad Bhagavatam's purpose is, they're working very hard in order to get more enjoyment, more sense gratification. So their worldview is just the opposite. They do the same thing, but the result is just the opposite. So they can't understand how it is that someone can work very hard and not simply want to get more and more personal enjoyment. Yanisha sarvabhuta nam tasyam jagrati samyami. For the materialist, what is daytime is night for the transcendentalist. And what is night, what is daytime for the materialist is night for the transcendentalist. So it is just the opposite. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami. Yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashate. What is it? Sanisha pashato mune. We are up very early, rising. And I remember over the New Year's Day, some of them were just, their evening was just starting at 4 o'clock. So when it's said that human life is meant for austerity, it is not that kind of austerity or ugra karma. Many successful people in this material world rise at 4 in the morning and start writing memos to themselves and working very, very hard and work 12, 15, 20 hours a day. So this is austerity mixed with ignorance and passion. And this austerity locks the human being into a lower than human being life form. Lower than animal life form even, because at least among the animals, their senses and their brains are not so developed. So they're simply looking for food, shelter, place to eat, place to sleep, and they're looking for a mate. But human beings, because they have lost the Vedic culture, they have forgotten Krishna to such a great extent that they have descended to a platform lower than animals. Instead of just defending by killing one or two other human beings to eat, they've developed the capacity and they've proven themselves capable of killing millions and millions of human beings. So the animals don't have this capacity. But human beings, if they're devoid of their remembrance of Krishna, they sink into these lower modes and they actually become less than the animals. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says, Shukla means consisting of shuddha-sattva. This is the goal, to come to the platform of pure goodness. Because even in goodness, we find that there are many attempts to do good in the world, but because they are mixed with passion and ignorance, they are actually a failure. When there was the great hue and cry to feed the starving Ethiopians after the famine, and millions were raised and sent there, and so much food was sent there, it was all charity in the mode of ignorance. Because within 7 or 8 months, the condition resumed. People were fed, and then the starvation settled in again, even after the whole world was giving money and became a very famous cause celeb, something very popular, everyone thought was very wonderful. Because it was mixed in passion and ignorance. And we know about the missionaries that go into Africa and they build hospitals and they bring medicine and they teach people this and that. Because of their mixture of their desire, because it's not ahoy tikiya tapa tiyata, it's not pure devotional service, because it's motivated, it's not even devotional in many cases. Very often the opposite of what they seek to achieve is what's realized. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is actually the only true way to help humanity. And when a Vaishnava desires to help others, his desire is actually reciprocated with by the Lord, and he's successful because Krishna is satisfied. If one desires to help people and it stays on the mundane level, because there's no attempt, there's no initiative to bring the living entity out of this material entanglement, out of the misconception that I'm this body, then there's no reciprocation. But when a devotee engages in welfare work for all, then he is successful and he's willing to make great sacrifices. The six Goswamis made these great sacrifices. They threw off all their aristocracy and their learning. Why? To raise the suffering condition of the living entities. That was their goal, that was their desire. So to raise the living entities means to come to this point of purity, to the point of Shuddha Sattva. And in order to do this, as Prabhupada says, Krishna sends his representatives. Because the conditioned souls are in a helpless and hopeless condition otherwise. So it's a great mercy when a Mahabhagavat comes to this world to release us from this condition. And he also sends his representatives. He develops many followers to also do this. This is what Prabhupada did. Without Prabhupada's coming into this world, there would have been not a glimmer, not a ray of hope that anything could ever be changed. The world is in such a retrograde condition that there is no hope, actually. And those who are qualified to come to Krishna consciousness are those, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Affairs of Queen Kunti, are those who are materially exhausted. When one is a little intelligent, one realizes that there's actually no satisfaction in this material world. But if there's not a positive alternative, some way that the living being can be lifted out of this condition, even when he's intelligent enough to realize it, then there is no hope. Srila Prabhupada used to say that an intelligent person comes to the point finally of realizing, after thinking things over very carefully, that the fact that I have to die is not a good situation. So if he's intelligent, he'll think how to psychologically make an adjustment that I have to die sometime and everything will come to an end. So what am I going to do about this? How am I going to make an adjustment to this position? So that's an intelligent position. He sees the material world as not satisfactory. And then he can understand that there must be some better solution. So when the pure devotee comes, or with his representative, or when Krishna comes in his incarnation, his avatar, such a person is immediately able to realize that there is a way to get out of this material world. And sometimes those who are materialists, they think of, because they see our day as night and our night is their day, they think of chanting and dancing and worshipping as escapism, that there's some make-believe world that we will go to that doesn't really exist. When the Krishna book came out, I was in England. We had these big hard volume books and we went to get reviews. We were trying to distribute it. One of our helpers, one gentleman who was a member of parliament there, was very helpful to the devotees and helped us get our first building, and was very friendly, and Prabhupada appreciated his service. So he was one of the people. I gave him a gift of the Krishna book, and actually the book was very much appreciated even by people who didn't understand it. I even took it into one of the big daily newspapers, Evening Mail, I think. It was a big daily 4 million circulation newspaper, and somehow or other the man wrote a very nice review. He didn't really go into it too deeply, but it was in a daily column. Let's talk about a book he wrote very nicely about. He called it a luxurious book. He said the devotees were very gentle, and this was a great contribution from India and so on. But anyway, when this member of parliament was, he had the book, and he took us out to a place once. He wanted to reciprocate with some of the things that we'd done. He thought we were being very nice to him. We gave him prasadam, and he was feeling very happy in our association. So he invited us to come out and see a performance of Indian dancing in an auditorium that was named after him in a suburb of London. So he had a bad habit of drinking. And during the intermission, he insisted that I come out with him to this restaurant, which turned out to be more of a bar than a restaurant. He wanted to sort of reveal his mind a little bit. Anyway, somehow he got to talking about the Krishna book. He said he thought it was one of the most beautiful books he'd ever seen. But because he was in a very uninhibited frame of mind, he said, but you don't really believe these things, do you? I mean, these are just stories, aren't they? They're not real things. You don't really believe them. And, of course, you can't really speak very openly with someone in that state of mind. But it was clear that he couldn't actually understand that there was another world beyond this material world that really existed. So this is the difficulty. And unless devotees or Krishna himself or an avatar comes into this world, there is no knowledge. There's no knowledge of renunciation. The purpose of life is to simply enjoy. That is keeping the whole world going. Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Manastasani Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. Everyone is trying to enjoy with the senses. Struggling very hard. That's the word used in the Bhagavad Gita. Struggling very hard to enjoy the senses. And unless there is some mercy from the Lord, they will just continue to revolve. And there will be actually no hope. Namam duskrita namudhapra bhajante naradama. So this is the mercy of the Vaishnava. He's willing to make a great sacrifice. This is the austerity. It's not just, and also even in so-called spiritual endeavors, there's a kind of austerity in the mode of ignorance. We see them sometimes in the Kumbh Mela. We were talking the other day about one man who stands on one leg and in Vrindavan all the day, all night. He stands on one leg for 5 years, is it? And there's another person who has one arm raised up. He never puts it down after 20 years, and it's all shriveled up now. And then there's the tantrics, and they actually do lay on the nails and put things through their ears and their cheeks and on and on and on. So these kinds of austerities are also in the mode of ignorance. And there are austerities, ritualistic austerities, of people who starve for days and days on end. And Srila Prabhupada explained that austerities, if they're not in the mode of pure goodness, they cause us to become hard-hearted. People become hard-hearted. We see this sometimes among Mayavadi people, Mayavadi yogis. They become very hard, very distant, very removed. So our austerities actually are quite simple. To chant, to follow the regulative principles, and to purify the tongue with prasadam, that's our austerity. It's not a difficult austerity, but it is an austerity. And this austerity is actually minimized when love of Krishna develops. As our feeling for Krishna begins to evolve, we're able to tolerate more and more austerities. We see these great devotees in Vrindavan living very simply. I remember when we were doing the parikram around Govardhan, there was one man that sat in a little kutir, maybe you saw him, it's a little cement or brick dwelling, and he just sits there and chants all day, from morning till night, in a loincloth, chanting Govinda Jai Jai and other chants with a little one-string instrument. And all day long people come on the parikram and throw little coins in. So there are thousands like that. They just sing the names of Krishna, they glorify Krishna all day. So to work very hard to glorify the Lord and to elevate others, that is actually the perfection of the human being. Prabhupada was speaking on the sixth chapter, last verse of the Bhagavad Gita one time, about mind control, yoginam api sarvesham. And he said, if you really want to control your mind, he was speaking many things, but at the end of the lecture he was saying, you have to learn how to tax your brain to spread Krishna consciousness. This will be perfect mind control. Just tax your brain over and over again, how to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. That is the secret, then your mind will always be controlled. So when we think less about our own selves and more about the suffering of others and how to alleviate them with Krishna consciousness, then selfishness begins to evaporate and the desire for sense gratification begins to evaporate. I remember I was in the Las Vegas airport once. I was very late and I was rushing through to catch a plane. We had a little preaching center out there. I used to go every week for a while. And as I was kind of rushing through, I heard a couple of women's voices, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And I looked, and it was all kind of in a flash because I was actually running to catch the plane, that I saw an old lady being wheeled out by some medics out of the airport with an intravenous bottle, and two devotees from Los Angeles who were there distributing books were walking along chanting to this lady who was probably on her deathbed or about to die. And so they were walking with her, sort of escorting her out to the ambulance, and I was thinking how amazing our devotees. You know, here's someone who's about to die. And immediately they stopped their book distributing to make sure that she could hear the holy name before she died. Sometimes we see amazing things done by devotees like this because their compassion is unlimited. In the Christian theology, one is Lazarus or someone said that you should the teachings of Jesus were summarized in love God with all thy heart and soul and mind and love thy neighbor as thyself. So this is actually what an avatar or an incarnation or a representative of Krishna does, or how such a person thinks. He thinks of others' sufferings as his own. The Prophet even quoted Chanakya saying that we should see others as ourselves. So he actually feels those things. In Prabhupada's room in 1967 in San Francisco, he was sitting in his room and we were sitting with him, and he said, we were talking about all the difficulties of the world. Actually, one thing had happened. He was lamenting how the people are so miserable because so many people, in one way, they're innocent and they're being exploited by the politicians. So one friend came rushing up into Prabhupada's room with a newspaper. He said, look, Swamiji, your prime minister has been stoned. Apparently, Indira Gandhi had come into Bombay in the airport and there had been a big famine there, so many farmers had assembled. And all of a sudden, before the police could do anything, they were throwing rocks at her because in their simple way, they took the prime minister to be the representative of God, and that she wasn't doing her job because they weren't getting any rainfall, because the pious kings off the Rajarishis used to be so powerful that there was never any lack of rainfall in their realm. So anyway, they had been doing this. He showed this picture to Prabhupada. It was on the front page of the paper, and Prabhupada was very shocked, very concerned. Prabhupada just smiled and said, oh, very good, very good. So that's the opposite of the way the Rajarishis felt. When Maharaj Shibi heard that a pigeon was being tortured in his kingdom, he cut flesh from his own body to equal the weight of the pigeon, to show how much the king has to show compassion and suffer on behalf of others. So this is very pleasing, actually, when the devotees underwent austerity in the Kumbh Mela. with Prabhupada. He was very pleased to see that they would take their bath in the cold water. This made Prabhupada very happy to see the devotees were willing to undergo austerities for the sake of Krishna consciousness. Anyway, Prabhupada was sitting in his room once after this incident about Nirgani. Lift the conditioned souls from the material. So we have a realization.
with asking government support. Then just collect money yourself, so that you understand. But,
on this world, it makes me cry that I actually cry. So we had a realization that the Prabhupada wasn't so soft-hearted that he actually felt the suffering of others as his own, and he would lament and even cry out of compassion for them. So this is the part of Dukkha Dukkhi that Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks of. Vaishnava is always feeling great compassion. It's very difficult, he said once, preaching is a thankless task, to lift the conditioned souls from the material world. To induce people to undergo voluntary austerity is not easy. To undergo any austerity is not easy, even for one's own sustenance. But to undergo austerity for uplifting the whole world is a very great austerity. It's like sometimes as devotees we have to undergo great austerities. Sometimes things seem very difficult and we have to tolerate the intolerable things. But we're sustained with the conviction that Krishna is pleased and that Krishna will reward us. He guarantees us that he will reciprocate and that we will go back to Godhead eventually by this service, and that we're fulfilling the order of our spiritual master. This is the perfection of human life. If we can actually carry out the order of Krishna as brought to us through the spiritual master, then whatever austerities we go, they will become enjoyable. Prabhupada once said in L.A. in 1971, he said, this Krishna consciousness, it is simply a system of recreation. Some of the devotees were going, what does he mean? It's so difficult sometimes. Even though sometimes Prabhupada was in some sort of apparent anxiety, he was always in that blissful consciousness. So there's a kind of spiritual anxiety as well, exhibited by the gopis. They were always in anxiety. Is Krishna stepping on stones? What is Krishna doing now? Is he worried about this or that? But that anxiety, or that crying for Krishna, is the same as spiritual ecstasy. It's not lamentation. It's not anxiety based on our senses in common go low mode. It's not that kind of anxiety that comes after our senses aren't gratified. So we have the good fortune to have had a great Mahabhagavat like Prabhupada come into our lives and do what Krishna did. He's reestablishing the eternal religious principles, and not just in Vrindavan or Mayapur, but everywhere, all over the world. So one of the things that makes Prabhupada so attractive is that he's spreading Krishna consciousness so far and giving us that vision. It's what gives us great happiness, even though we're in our own place here. We can see that Krishna consciousness is expanding, and that this and all the temples are there the bulwark of this Krishna consciousness movement. They're oases in the great desert of the material world, where the parched minds of the people can come and drink spiritual ecstasy and finally become satisfied. Yayat mam supersiddhi. Nothing else will actually satisfy the anxiety of the conditioned soul. In a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Chaitanya Prabhupada speaks of how his disciples will have to undergo great austerities, but he says they will be able to perform Herculean tasks like Hanuman and Arjuna, greater than Hanuman and Arjuna, he says in that purport. And he explains that what they went through, destroying Lanka and fighting the battle of Kurukshetra against odds, was a great Herculean task. So he says our devotees will undergo be able to perform greater tasks, and that this Krishna consciousness movement will spread just like a rock thrown in the water causes the waves to ripple to the bank, will spread all over the world, and then the waves of this Sankirtan movement will ripple on out through outer space and onto the outer shell of the universe. This is the vision that Srila Prabhupada gave us. So our simple austerities, collectively result in spreading the rays of the Sankirtan moon all over the world. So this is the Shuddha Sattva platform. Man-made dharma has no meaning, Prabhupada says. Sometimes we see there's a contradiction in human behavior, even human law. So Prabhupada says that it has none, and dharma tu sakshat, Bhagavad Pranita, religious principles are given by Krishna. So Krishna consciousness means to re-establish, or Prabhupada used the phrase, very nice phrase, he said that Krishna consciousness movement is the re-spiritualization, a movement for the re-spiritualization of human society. So this means bringing the original laws back to the face of the earth, and this causes, as he says, the transformation of the whole of the earth. So it begins with a little simple austerity, tapo divyam, and then gradually our love of Krishna develops. And when love of Krishna develops in the heart, it shines just like a great moon, the rising moon. Chaitanya, Mayapur Chandra Doya, the temple is called the rising moon of Lord Chaitanya. And then it benedicts everyone. It is cooling and beneficial and pleasing for everyone on the planet. Human being or non-human being, everybody is benefited, just like the rain when it falls. Indiscriminately, it may fall in the ocean, but every living being is benefited. So we'll stop there. Any comments or questions? We don't hear about the Kali Yuga taking place in the higher planetary systems. This material world has to go through these seasonal changes. Right, they're not experienced in the however, Kali Yuga has a special prerogative. It's called the Mahaguna, the great quality. And that is that one can chant the holy name of the Lord and get immediate benediction and actually get the opportunity to go beyond these higher planetary systems. Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangam Param Vrajit, one can go straight to the spiritual world. So when Lord Chaitanya came, all the demigods actually came, as we read in the Chaitanya Chaitanya, they were here. They were all in ordinary clothes. Hard to imagine. 330 million they were there in Bengal. It's mentioned. It's difficult to understand. But of course when Krishna came. So Kali Yuga has that special, very special quality. Kali Dosha Nidhaya Raja. Not every Kali Yuga, but the holy name is that Krishna comes, Lord Chaitanya comes, but the chanting of the holy name is always available. And if it's chanted in the sense of the Yuga Dharma, one can get liberation. So I think one kalpa Lord Chaitanya and Krishna come together.
And in reference
to all the other Yugas, what's the relationship between what's happening?
Well, when we get the power to go there, we'll be able to find out. You have to be a yogi to go and see. There's millions and millions of universes. And Krishna's pastimes are going on. Yes, they're different times. Yes.
Why is it that
Our Prabhupada used to say, it's what happens to us is a combination of what we deserve and what we desire. If Krishna didn't give us free will, there would be no love. In other words, the living being, Mamavamsa Jivaloka, is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna. But he also has his individual identity as a Jivatma. And the Jivatma means that he always has his individuality is always preserved. So he always has independence, but it's minute independence. It's minute compared to Krishna. Krishna has ultimate independence, and we have minute independence. So therefore we're a reflection, a sample of Krishna. And because we're so small, we're easily overwhelmed by Maya. So in order for love to exist between the Supreme Father Krishna, Hamabija Pradapita, and the living entity, we must have free will. If a parent tries to control every movement and breath of the child will be miserable. Sometimes we let our children play or do things that are a little dangerous or not to our liking. But that's done out of love. That's the bond of love, the free will exists. So Krishna lets the living entities have their free will, minute as it is compared to his. And in different times and places, their free will causes others to suffer. But again, we have to understand that in the long term, all of these souls, they may be suffering. It doesn't mean it's their only opportunity. So Krishna comes out of his own sweet will, out of his kindness, or sends his representatives to benedict the living entities so that they can get the opportunity. And if they don't get it in one lifetime, they'll get an opportunity in another lifetime. But it's always a special mercy when Krishna or his representative comes, because that means they immediately get the opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. So due to our what we deserve, we're kept in this prison house of the material world against our higher nature. And it's essentially due to our behavior. And the material world is not only punishment, but it's also a place of reform. We understand reading the fifth canto that when there's punishment after this lifetime en route to the hellish planets, the living entity begins to understand how sinful and makes some mental attempt to repent. And similarly in the womb, read about that also in the third canto, how the living entity in the womb is praying for release and vowing never to sin again. So all these things have a reformatory side to them. One is punished, but the punishment has a way of bringing the living entity to not want to suffer again. So these are some of the things that happen according to our desire. We create manasasthan indriyani bhakti stanikarshti. We're maintaining this material world by our desires. And just like the prisoner can be released by the clemency of the head of state, Krishna can come in and release us even when we don't deserve it. That's special mercy of the Vaishnava of Krishna. So that free will exists to preserve the loving relationship Krishna has with his parts and parcels. Sometimes it's said Krishna has a very difficult job. He has to satisfy both the thief and the person who he's stealing from. The web of karma is so complex.
Can you speak a little louder? You hit the last part.
Well, I can tell a few. I'm not a great book distributor, that's for sure. But, I can tell some stories. My experience is not anything very memorable. I just went out and distributed some books and people gave some donations. I started by distributing Back to God. It's because there weren't any books, and that was what I did more than anything. In San Francisco, we had Back to Godheads, and that's where we started distributing books in 1967. So I used to go to a place called North Beach, San Francisco, and just walk up and down the streets, and people would give 25 cents or 50 cents to get a Back to Godhead. And maybe we'd sell between 10 and 50 a day, depending on what it was like. And generally, people were in a dhoti. They would stop. They were very interested. I didn't really know what to do or what to say. Just sort of gave me a book and started talking. And sometimes we would go to concerts and distribute books. There was a Ravi Shankar concert. I remember we went out. We thought that would be a good place to distribute. And the Back to Godhead we had was had Nisringadeva on the cover at that time. Big black and white picture of Nisringadeva, Hiranyakashipu on his lap. And it was a little difficult sometimes, especially when the people were older. I remember one lady started talking to her, and I pulled out the magazine to show her. And she said, "Who's that?" I said, "Well, that's actually Krishna, the form of Krishna." And she became completely appalled. "That's your God?" Really shocked. So sometimes it's hard to distribute, depending on what was on the cover, it was a little difficult to distribute Back to Godhead. We used to distribute in a Sankirtan party most of the time. We would just have a big Harinam party down on the streets in the central part of the city. And we would approach people, and we would see that they were quite transfixed on the Sankirtan party. We'd stop when there was a big crowd. We'd go up to them, and they were so transfixed on watching the devotees chant that it was like a hypnotic effect almost. They wouldn't leave. So it was very easy to go up and distribute. At least we could go and talk with them, and usually they would buy. And sometimes we would get a dollar, we'd ask for a dollar donation. And in London, we used to go every day up and down Oxford Street from about 9 or 10 in the morning till 5. And as we were saying the other night, it was all illegal. So we had two devotees watch for police at both ends of the party. As soon as they would see their big blue helmets up above the crowd, they'd give us a signal and we'd move on to the next few blocks down. But we'd also attract a huge crowd. 50, 100 people would be crowded around us. We used to sell lots and lots of magazines like that. They were shoppers, so they sort of had money in their pockets and their wallets and their purses, and it was quite easy to sell magazines. So we'd go up with a big armful, and we'd actually sell several hundreds of magazines in an hour. I had, say, 8-9 distributors were selling, and we'd stop, and then we would be at each spot for maybe a half hour until the police came in, and we'd rush down to the other end and do it again. This is the way we did for a long, long time, over a year. And as I said, it was all illegal. The police told us it was illegal to see them. And if they did catch us, they'd arrest us. But they weren't trying to sort of stop us once and for all. They just felt if they happened to see us, they'd have to give us a ticket. And then sometimes they would, but we tried to make friends with them because we knew that they could stop the whole thing if they really wanted to. But they were kind of softened by that Sankirtan. We became a big tourist attraction. They used to sell photos of the devotees in the tourist stalls. There was a little slideshow box they would sell with 8 slides. It would show the changing of the guards, Tower of London, Windsor Cathedral, or Windsor Palace, Houses of Parliament. There were about 10, and one of them was the Hare Krishnas. The little thing was called Characters of London. And there was a little sheet that went with it. You folded out, and it gave a whole explanation, something that they got from our books, who Prabhupada was, what Krishna was. It was very nice, actually. And we didn't, because it was a special holiday, special observance day, if we didn't go out and chant, then the very next day, the shop owners would come out and say, "Where were you? We didn't see you yesterday. We thought you left town." We used to give them prasadam. And everyone knew where the Hare Krishnas were. They knew where to find us. I was the president at that time, and our telephone bill got very big for a while there. And we were trying, but we were very late in paying it off. So the person who was calling and trying to collect the funds for me had an office in Oxford Street, right above where we used to chant. So out of exasperation, one day she came running out to the Sankirtan party, walking up to every man saying, "Who's Michael Grant? Where's Michael Grant? Are you Michael Grant? You've got this enormous telephone bill. I've got to talk to him. I've got to pay this bill." She was very nice, though, once we started talking to her. And I think she even got a book. I'm not sure. I think she took a magazine. So that's how we distributed, and we actually supported the temple on distribution of the magazines. And then we started to get the books finally. And again, we would people would stop, or we would go out alongside the party, and we would sell books. We used to sell Nectar of Devotion, I remember. And then we had Krishna books also to sell. They were a little bit higher to sell. But people liked them. We also sent the books out to be reviewed. And we would sell a lot of books in the temple, too, in those days. And we would sell a lot of books at the engagements. We went to colleges a lot. And almost everyone would buy books and magazines. This isn't about my personal experience, but there was a devotee in the... Was it Holland? I'm not sure which country he did this in, but his name was Maharam. So they in Europe they would go during the marathons and distribute unbelievable numbers of books. So this devotee, I think he might have been a German devotee, was doing. They would do hundreds and hundreds of big books a day. This man did about 200 or 300 books a day or more. The big fancy books. So he was at the end of his, he had one big bag of books left, and he it was so late that there was no one around, but somehow he saw the stage door to a theater, and he walked into it, and it was at an intermission of a play. It was just about to start, the second half, and he just sort of stumbled out onto the stage in front of the whole theater. This actually happened. And he started giving a spiel about the books, and he said, "Now you're going to see one of the most amazing dramas in history unfold. I'm going to tell you about the spiritual world." He started acting out some of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. It was just amazing. And anyway, he said, "And now I'm going to continue this drama by walking out among you and selling books about this drama in the spiritual world." And every single person, or he sold every single book to people in the audience. I wish I could remember all the details, because it was very dramatic the way he did it. That's one of the stories I remember. Another time, one of these devotees went in. It was at the end of the day, and he was at the very... He had to sell his last sack full of books, and he went into a butcher's convention and gave a... It was an association of butchers. I think this was in Belgium. And every one of them bought a book. They were very moved by his presentation. Anyway, so many stories. You could write books about them.
I'm reminiscing at those periods in England. You had quite an association with George Harrison. Of course, everybody in the material world knows George Harrison. And can you just recap for the rest of the world some of the associations? And presently,
I really don't know what he's doing now, other than he was touring last month with Eric Clapton, and we've always met him in Japan and gave him some prasad. He's very, very nice. And I think he's still touring and making records and still friendly and likes prasad. But I didn't have so much association with him. It was more Shyam Sundar. He was just very friendly, and he felt he'd known the devotees from a past life. So he was always the same age as we were when we met him in London. So he had a very friendly relationship with him, and he made the record, the Hare Krishna Mantra, and he was very happy when that came out. He said that it was the happiest What did he say? Something like it was the happiest moment of his life when he saw us on television on the Top of the Pops. So he really felt good. He, of course, was a little detached. He liked being a Beatle and being a famous personality when he was just a young person. But it was striking when he said that, that when he saw the devotees' record that he produced on Top of the Pops, that was the most satisfying thing, even though he had all this adulation. And Prabhupada also liked him. He called him a very nice boy. He always treated him very affectionately. Whenever he came, he would give him samosas and talk to him in a very friendly way. So
I heard that he gave him a ring towards the end of his life.
I think what happened with that ring. And what happened was I think so. I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj knows this, because as I remember now, Prabhupada, when he was in Vrindavan, his last days, gave Tamal Krishna Maharaj this ring to give to George. You know about that, anybody?
Right,
that's what happened. He gave it to him. That I don't know. I think I asked him about it once, if he was wearing it. I don't think he was wearing it. He might have worn it for a while, but no, the fact that the Prabhupada gave it to him was very special.
So, and John Lennon, the influence of John Lennon. Also, actually, my wife was the same the other day. We were listening to some John Lennon recording that he did in 68 with the where he chanted Hare Krishna and all the devotees were there. That he had a great influence on the world for creating a mood of peace, and probably more than anybody else in the world. What do you think of that? It's a fairly correct statement.
Well, that was kind of coming after the. It started amidst these anti-Vietnam war protests. John Lennon was in London or Montreal or someplace like that. I think it was Montreal, in Berkeley, where they were having these big student riots and water cannons with the police. They were very famous. John Lennon's voice was amplified from his telephone in his hotel room in Montreal, if I'm not mistaken. He was rallying the crowd on to protest. So he was involved in that movement. But it was a temporary thing like everything else. All the peace movement ended and Krishna consciousness was still there. But he did, it was nice. He had the devotees, they chanted in his room when he was doing his, they were having some sort of a protest in a hotel room in Montreal. And he had different people come, and that's when they made that Give Peace a Chance record with the devotees. They were also dancing and chanting in the room, so everybody got to see them. There's a tape of a movie of that we saw.
There is.
You must have that. You have so many things.
Yeah.
You have that?
Yeah, I have some of it. There's a lot more.
There was Bharadraj was there, Rukmini, they were dancing. Nice. He was very friendly to the devotees.
So this had a very good impression on the fact that he was accepting being such a widely accepted personality himself.
Yeah, when he chanted Hare Krishna, I liked that because then so many people could hear the holy name. He liked that very much. We were reading yesterday, last night here in London, Prabhupada wanted to engage all of them in spreading Krishna consciousness because they were so popular. He was quoting to them, Yad Yad Acharati Shrestha. Dakshin has a wealth of video and audio materials, of course.